Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew, and as always, my co-host, Matt, is here with me. Matt, it has been a nice little summer break, a brutally hot summer break, I must say, but definitely a nice summer break at that. But we are ready to get back into it. The New York Jets are starting training camp as of next week. As early as this Saturday, the rookies will be reporting July 25th. On Tuesday, the 28th, will be the veteran report date, and on next Wednesday, the 29th, we will have the first practice for Jets training camp of the 2026 season. Matt, I know you're excited. I'm excited. We're going to get into that here in a little bit. We're also going to talk about what is likely to be the story, I think. I don't want to speak for you, Matt, but I would assume most people following the Jets are going to be more focused on this aspect of the team than anything else. It's going to be the quarterback they're going to draft next year. And there's a good handful of them that could be potentially high first round picks in this 2027 draft class. We're going to get into that as training camp continues on each week, giving you guys a little profile into a couple of potential high draft pick quarterbacks and who to watch for as the season continues. Before we get to that, Matt, I want to throw this to you. How was your summer and what are you excited for training camp getting back going?
Summer was all right. You know, we had the World Cup. Started watching the other football. It was fun for a little bit, but now it's over, and now it's back to real football, where our heart lies and also cries. So it was nice, but it's nice to get back.
No, it's definitely nice to get back. In terms of camp getting back going, obviously we're excited to see the new additions. They've had a tremendous amount of roster turnover on this team. Even though it is the same coaching staff and same front office, it is a completely different team. And there is a multitude of avenues you can look at that from the rest of the coaching staff. It is a same head coach, but not really anybody else. They have, I believe I saw this correctly, Matt, they have 10 new starters this year in total from expected acquisitions. That's practically an entire half of their starting lineup.
Yeah, really.
That are going to be brand new starters. So first things first, I'm really eager to see just how all of these new faces gel and who the leaders jump out to be, who looks to be in really good shape. I'm really, really curious if I had to pin one name down. I'm very, very eager to see Minkah Fitzpatrick and how he's utilized, because I think that is going to tell us a lot about the rest of the safety rotation.
Yeah, I could see that. And you know, like the secondary's kind of been beat up for the better half of a decade. Even with Sauce back there, it hasn't been pretty, especially at the safety position. Mm-hmm. So if we could find some kind of stability back there, it would only help everybody else, and solidify that the secondary in a way that we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, I really would. And not only that, I'm more thinking from, like I said, a utilization standpoint, where is he going to be playing predominantly deep? Is he going to be playing predominantly more in the box? Is he going to be more of a nickel? And if they want to do a bigger nickel, are they going to have two other starting safeties and then Minkah Fitzpatrick and Brandon Stevens, Azariah Thomas, D'Angelo Pons, Nashawn Wright, some combination of the four as the outside corners? Or are we going to see him as a traditional starting safety? I mean, they traded not a major asset for him whatsoever, but they did immediately extend him. they did make an investment in him financially, to where, not that I think he's going to be a part-time player, if he's, even if he's playing predominantly in the slot, I don't think that means he's a part-time player. But I'm curious to see, and we probably won't get to see this until more in the season, or at least I hope they keep their plan under wraps a little bit. I'm curious to see, where does Minka's predominant major first role lie? And how does everybody else fill in besides that? Because there's, if he's predominantly playing as the free safety, and we do expect them with Glenn calling this defense and having a much more of an influence than he did, and he still had an influence last year, even though it was Steve Wilks, they were still 20 Aaron Glenn heavy man coverage, cover one on, you know, early downs, mid downs, third downs, didn't matter. There's going to be even more of an Aaron Glenn influence. There's going to be a lot of single high looks. Is that where Minka is going to play? And if not, then who's playing that role? Because it's a really crucial role in this defense.
That's a great question. Who else is there? We got Belton, Moore, Cisco, the rookie Payne. So it's not like anybody's really jumping out at you that could really kind of take that position on and make it theirs. So really, Fitzpatrick is kind of the only guy that I think I would trust right now going into camp playing that position.
That's what I would assume. I'm curious, though, because you have the Brian Duker connection. And with him in Miami last year, granted, Duker wasn't the one calling the defense himself or picking the roles for Minka Fitzpatrick to be in, but was still involved in that unit and was still involved with Minka on a daily basis. And Minka was predominantly a slot player last year in Miami. And not that that's bad. He was plenty good at it. I think he's going to be, I think there's a strong chance he could be the most effective member of their whole secondary this year. If not, they're just outright best secondary player, period. But he could be doing it from the slot. And that's what he was doing in Miami. And that's what Duker has the familiarity with. And so if this is a situation where, if Aaron Glenn is designing the plays and calling the defense, then we might see more fit free safety Minka. But if Duker is the one designing the plays and Glenn is taking the call sheet and making the calls based on Duker's designs, then it's the situation where, are we going to see Minka utilized more like he was in Miami?
So who is the free safety then, or in Miami?
I'd have to go back and look at I don't remember their starter, but in terms of actual usage, they didn't have a good one. But in terms of actual usage, Minka
Ashton
was
Davis?
Premier, it probably was. Actually, you're right. It probably was Ashton Davis.
Well, then you know what? I mean, Fitzpatrick worked in that slot position. And maybe they're willing to give up a little bit on in single high, but that you kind of hit the nail on the head with saying that it's kind of a crucial position. So
really
I don't
is.
See them doing that. So I'm not going to, I'm going to kind of look at what happened in Miami as an isolated thing. And I think it's going to be something probably completely different with us.
I will say that's what I'm hoping for. I wish I could say that's what I think is going to happen. I genuinely don't know, and I could see it both ways. In my heart of hearts, if you made me guess, I don't think they gave him that extension to be in the slot. And then I definitely don't think they draft D'Angelo Pons if they think that Minka is going to be predominantly in the slot. Not that Pons is going to be only a slot player either. We know he can definitely handle himself outside, but they have kind of this multi-faction secondary, at least in their corner group, to where some downs, depending on a matchup, you could have D'Angelo Pons outside. Some downs, it could be Nashawn Wright. It could be Brandon Stevens. It could be Zaire Thomas. And any one of those guys can play outside, and then you can have Pons in the nickel if you want to have more than one of them on the field at once. So there's going to be pieces you can mix and match, but I just don't know if they gave Minka that money to have him playing in the box. To me, it was Glenn knew he didn't have that guy last year, and it's such a major piece of his defense. And so that was, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, that was their first acquisition of the entire offseason, was trading for Minka Fitzpatrick, because it was before the league year started, because it was a trade.
Oh, you're right.
So I think it was right before the start of free agency, like right as free agency was leading up, they pulled off that trade and immediately extended it. So that to me seems like they did that for a reason, to say, Glenn, knowing I'm going to call this defense, I need somebody on the back end patrolling things from the top down that isn't going to make mistakes, and I need to go get this guy. That's what I'm hoping for.
I mean, when you look at the group of cornerbacks and the safeties, you've got a bunch of guys that could play multiple positions. And I think that's going to be kind of, you know, the deal for all of them. I think they're just all going to be rotating and playing all over the place. So do I think that Fitzpatrick's going to always play single high or just be a box guy? I think he's going to be everything. And I think they gave him that extension to be everything.
I hope so. And I think ultimately you're right that we're going to see the multiple usage. I would love to see a Jets defense that reminds me of the heydays of Rex Ryan, where everything is disguise every play. And you have players rotating into roles and positions that are unexpected because they're capable and athletic enough to do it, where, yes, on the depth chart, Minkah Fitzpatrick is the free safety. And we might have him in roles where he ends up patrolling in the middle of the field. But at the start of the play, he's going to be like Mike linebacker. And then we're going to drop him in a Tampa 2 and let him run the pole. Or we're going to have him line up as a strong safety and we're going to show cover 3. And then we're going to rotate back to a cover 2 and let him get deep and patrol a deep half. I really hope we see more disguise this year, specifically in the safety rotation. And I'm hoping that having somebody like Minkah makes that easier to do.
And I think it does. But you know what? Time will tell.
Time will definitely tell. Matt, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the wide receiver 2 position. Because right now, I think you would have Mitchell in there, right? But
presumably.
I want to see if Omar Cooper can really make strides and get a rapport with Geno early and kind of sneak into that spot. It would be nice if that was the case, because I still like Mitchell, and I think that as a third option is pretty good, especially when we saw him be the primary last year. So with Wilson kind of taking the bulk, that second position becomes pretty valuable. But also, the pressure is kind of off a little bit when you look at all the other weapons that are around. When you look at the tight ends, when you look at Hall, when you look at Garrett, there's a lot of mouths to feed. So that wide receiver 2 position is one that's going to get a lot of work, but at the same time, it's a position that Cooper can kind of go in year one and kind of, you know, use that as a springboard for maybe the rest of his time with the Jets, and kind of find his footing. And if I would be ecstatic if he actually does it.
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic. I kind of want to get in the weeds about this a little bit, if you're willing to, Matt, because as you're talking about it, I just had this question keep coming to my mind, and I want to pose this to you, and not in any sort of an argumentative way, but because I think there's multiple ways you can answer this. What do you mean by wide receiver 2?
And targets.
Okay. So not necessarily in alignment. You're talking about targets and factor in the offense.
Yes.
By that answer, I think there is a world that Omar Cooper can be the wide receiver 2. I do not think there is going to be a world that Omar Cooper is the wide receiver 2 in terms of snap count, because I don't know who else is playing X besides A.D. Mitchell, and I don't think you can really play him anywhere else besides X either. So anytime they need to be in a 3 wide receiver set, and every now and again, you're going to have Garrett in situations where you're going to want him on the line, you're going to want him ISO'd and drawing coverage and trying to free up some of the other people the other ways. But in the other time, and a lot more often of a sense, you're going to want A.D. Mitchell on the line of scrimmage at that ISO X and you're going to want him doing what he's best at, which is being that vertical ISO X and allowing Garrett to be off the line of scrimmage. And not that Garrett can't beat press, but if he doesn't have to with his fluidity and skill set, then even better. You want to then allow Garrett to be in the roles to scheme him up to make plays. And for lack of a better phrase in ways, you're going to have Adee Mitchell be kind of a sacrificial X, where he's just going to be running deep and drawing coverage a lot of the time. I don't know if that's a role that Omar Cooper would fill as well as Adee Mitchell. So if you asked me on their usage total, if I had who has more snaps at the end of the season, Adee Mitchell or Omar Cooper, I'm going to say Adee Mitchell. If you ask me who has more catches, I might even say Adee Mitchell has more catches. If you ask me who had more yards and touchdowns, I'm going to go Omar Cooper, because I think he's going to get utilized in a way and featured in ways that Adee Mitchell isn't, and is not going to be the guy having to draw the vertical coverage to free everybody else up. He's going to be one of the other guys getting free.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. But if he, Adani's that sacrificial, then yeah, it's going to be, well, you know what? Geno does like to stretch the defense.
He does indeed.
So it's not like he's going to be primarily a decoy. He's not probably going to get a lot of burn out there, with those go routes.
It's something he's equipped to do very well. And so it's hard for me to, it's one of those things where the only other person they have right now that I think could do that is Garrett. And that's not what you want Garrett doing every single play. And I don't know where else Adee Mitchell factors in. So if they're going to be in a situation where, hell, they have any more than two wide receivers on the field, I think Adee Mitchell's going to be one of them.
No, I mean, more than likely. But it, I think even on rundowns, I don't mind having Cooper out there because he's such a physical presence, even with his short stature. Now, do I want him going up against linebackers? No, but I think that if you have him on the outside taking on safeties and cornerbacks, I do think that he can do a good job of kind of clearing the way a little bit. So I don't think you need Mitchell in that role. I think you can be a little bit more fluid.
No, I agree. I agree, and let me propose something else to you. He does it so Garrett doesn't have to.
Yeah, doing anything so Garrett doesn't have to, and
anything
Garrett
to
just be a monster.
Anything to just keep Garrett free to do what Garrett does best, and what you're paying him over $100 million to do, which is go burn coverage downfield.
That's a winning recipe right there.
That's a winning recipe. So I agree. I do think you could see Cooper factored in the run game. I think there could be plays where it's Adee Mitchell and Cooper are the only receivers on the field, and it's a rundown. And we're keeping Garrett safe for this play. Catch a breather and keep your ribs clean.
Yeah. I like that idea a lot more than, just using decoys and kind of just clearing the way for Garrett to do everything, and just have him do what he does best.
Yeah, no, I really do think that is everything that the Jets have done. And I really do want to give them credit for this, because I really think we're going to see it finally paid off this season. Everything they have done this year is to make sure that Garrett Wilson goes off. We're going to give other guys to draw coverage and targets. We're going to make sure the offensive line is secured. We're going to get a proven capable, even if he's not fantastic, it is going to be serviceable quarterback who's good at throwing the ball downfield and willing to give his receivers chances. And we're going to give other guys in the passing game that are going to create space for you to get open, to where you're not going to be the only guy that's any amount of a threat on the field. This is the... If Garrett doesn't go for like 1,300 this year, then he will when we finally get a quarterback. It's like the only thing that'll be truly missing is when they get the proven veteran or proven rookie who comes in and starts lighting it up and hits his year two, year three. But they have done everything they can to make life better for Garrett this year. And good Lord, does he deserve it?
Now, I'm sure I'm about to propose something that I'm sure there's a lot of things wrong with. What do you think of Sadiq as the X?
Yes. No, not no wrong. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Just yes. Absolutely. Sign me up. Don't care. If you remember, Matt, if you want to go back a few months, I know it's been a summer break and it's been a minute since we talked here. If you remember after the draft, I said, do that in the red zone. You put him at X ISO'd in the red zone and you put everybody else on the other side and you say, go win, Kenyon. Go run a slant. Go run a fade. Go in. Doesn't matter who's on you. Go in. And if they draw any coverage to you, cool. Garrett's wide open by himself in the corner. Like, yes, they not only do I want them to do that, they should do that. That is just a good idea.
Man, I hope everybody kind of lives up to what they are in my head right now. It usually never is, but it would be nice if for once, you know, they meet my expectations. And right now my expectations are pretty high just for this group of weapons as receivers.
It's hard to say that this isn't the best group of skill talent that they've had since 2015.
Since Holmes?
Marshall and Decker is where my brain went. But if you even want to look at the whole collection of talent, you had Chris Ivory that year. He was a really good running back. Underrated back. I'll die on that hill. Chris Ivory was great. You had Marshall and Decker at receiver. Was that Stefarian Jenkins at tight end?
Yes.
I would say that Sadiq or Mason Taylor could be better than Stefarian Jenkins was.
Oh, yes.
I think Breece Hall could be equal to and or greater than Chris Ivory. Definitely is a factor in the passing game for sure. And in terms of explosive plays, I would say the trio of Cooper, Garrett, A.D. Mitchell has the potential to equal Marshall and Decker. I won't say eclipse it because that was a ridiculous Brandon Marshall season. Like in totality, I think that's better. You said since Holmes, Cotchery and Braylon Edwards. Yeah, probably.
With Sean Green.
Right. And Sean Green, Thomas Jones, Keller at tight end. Yeah, and that was the last time they were in the playoffs. Imagine that.
Hey, it's weird that when that happens.
Funny enough, you score points and you win games.
But also offensive line. So we'll see where that takes us.
But I have faith in that this year. And I think that's where I want to last end, unless you have more to go in about this wide receiver position as a whole. But the offensive line, to me, I think they have a chance to be like a special group this year. I really do.
Where would you have them like ranked? Or where do you expect them to be ranked if they live up to your potential?
I think they'll be unequivocally a top 10 unit.
Oh, wow.
I think they'll be like, I'm not going to say top 5. I think they'll be like comfortably between 10 and 7. But yeah, I think those two tackles are going to be in for a year, man. I think you're going to see the Membu experience in year two. You're going to see Tippmann unlocked at guard with a complete full year of training and comfortability and not getting moved. Olu's just gotten better and better and more consistent. I think Parham and Myers can be fine enough to where they're not completely and totally hamstringing your unit. I think they have a chance to be really, really good. And next year, when they put in some other serious investments to the other two guys on the interior, they're going to be like dominant good.
So I think you're putting a little too much faith in Parham and Myers. I think there's a lot of potential there to be a significant weakness, which would also kind of bring down Olu with them. Tippmann and Membu, they'll keep things, you know, locked down on the right side. But once if you have two guys right next to each other that become holes, it does sink the rest. I would have them probably top 15. I have them a little further back as my peak. That's my ceiling. It would be 15. I think they'll probably be anywhere between 20 and 15.
So let me just propose this question.
Sure.
To look at it as if you wanted to, how I'm viewing it. that the overall positive outweighs the potential overall negative. There's 64 starting offensive tackles in the NFL every season. If Armon Membu and Olufashinu are both considered top 20 offensive tackles, not even top 10, top 20, they are better third of the league starters at their position by consensus, which I don't think is egregious to say for either of them with their potential. And there's 64 starting guards in the NFL. If Joe Tippmann is a top 20 starting guard, and the Jets have two top 20 starting tackles and a top 20 starting guard, how bad do Myers and Parham have to be for that not to be a top 10 unit?
I mean, there's a lot of potential for it to be bad. But I do think that the floor is a lot higher. Top 10, I still think it's going to be somewhere in between. But there is more potential there. If that inside holds up, then I could see them making that move into the top 10.
I don't think Parham or Myers are going to be good. I think they're going to be average. I think they could even be below average, but I don't think they're going to be completely and totally victimized turnstiles. Like I don't want to spend too long on this, Matt, and we might disagree, and I don't want to cut you off. So if you want to respond, please do. But I kind of feel like everyone's overrating how bad Josh Myers was last year. Like I don't, was he great? No. Was he horrible? I mean, I don't think so personally, Matt. I'm what goes back to my head every single time, let alone from just the ability to physically snap the football correctly. Do we remember what Spencer Long was like for a year? Do we remember how bad that actually was? Like, because I swear to God, people act like Josh Myers was that bad and were that concerned and that terrified of our center position this year. I'm not saying he's going to be great. I'm not even saying he's going to be good. I don't think he's Spencer Long bad, and I think there's fear that he is, and I don't support that.
See, this is where I'll probably be a little bit more optimistic, is that you have this is going to be his second year in this offense next to Tippmann.
Next to them. And right.
With this, that familiarity, I think, is going to help a lot. And also, yeah, when looking back last year, maybe production-wise, yeah, it was average or below average. But at the same time, I think he was in the right places at the right times.
I don't think he was making a ton of mental mistakes. Right.
No, I don't think the mental mistakes were there. I think it was more so just the physical talent not being there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you add the familiarity and the football IQ that he brings, then yes, there's a little bit more potential there.
I really think there is. I think there's too much worry about a guy that was just okay last year. That, like, in terms of the scale of the worst Jets at their positions, who did the worst job of what they were asked to do, I don't even think I would put Josh Myers in the top 10 of that for last season. Is Josh Myers a worse center than Justin Fields was a quarterback? No. Is Josh Myers a worse center than Jamie and Sherwood was a linebacker last year? No. Is Josh Myers a worse center than Jermaine Johnson was a defensive end getting home rushing the passer, as much as I love him? No. I think there's like levels that you can go down before you're getting to Myers as the clear culprit. And like you said, if it's familiarity, if it's comfortability, if it's somebody that's not making mental mistakes, if it's somebody that's durable, correct me if I'm wrong, he started every game last year.
Mm-hmm. The
whole offensive line did, exactly. So including Josh Myers.
Other than Vera Tucker, but
well, if you're out before the year starts, then you can then
doesn't really count.
Then right, does it really count? No, for Myers, I mean, he was durable, he was consistent. he wasn't making mental mistakes. Exactly like you said, it's just the physical talent may not be anything more than below average to average. Not every member of your offensive line is going to be a top 10 guy. I mean, you'd love to shoot for that. No one's saying you can't try, but I think we need to collectively pump the brakes on the fear of that. We can. I'm more worried about Parham than I am about Myers. I'll say that.
That's fair. But then again, even Parham has an upside. Kind of being the best, you know, person along that offensive line last year for Oakland.
Being multiple states away from Chip Kelly is going to do wonderful things for him and Geno Smith, I promise.
You know, you're making me a little bit more optimistic now.
You know, it's the time for optimism, Matt. It's the time for optimism. And I think that is a perfect transition into what's going to be the ending segment for our next couple of weeks here as we go through 12 potential early drafted quarterback prospects that the Jets are going to be looking at, that a lot of their fans, including us, are going to be looking at throughout this college season. They have 3 first round picks. Their biggest need by far is their franchise quarterback that they have yet to find for a multitude of years now. We all know that come hell or high water, they are going to be taking a quarterback in the first round. So we think it's prudent to go ahead and start familiarizing everybody with who those guys could be early on, so we can spend the season talking about them and not just a few months leading up to the draft. Matt, I want to go ahead and let you start here because we're going to talk about a guy that I believe we've talked about on this show before, but a refresher for everybody to get familiar with one of my favorite players that could be in this next coming draft already.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Lenora Sellers out of South Carolina. I don't think there is anybody else that can kind of match his physicality and ability as both a runner and a passer.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of potential there is so high that I don't even think if it would be nice to see him improve in some areas. But where? Even if he didn't, where?
If you're talking physical talent, I'm saying where?
Oh, no. Physical talent? No. He's already kind of, you know, shown that he can be at the tops in all those categories. It's more so just the mental side of being a quarterback. If he improves on that, then I don't see why there's any why he can't be talked about in, you know, the top 10, because if you match all that together with the football IQ and the smarts about it, then what is there to bring him down at that point?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a good arm, you've got the physicality as a runner, you've got I feel like he has decent field vision. But at the same time, I feel like he does lock on to receivers a lot. But you know what? I also think that had to do with just the offense that he was in.
Yep.
It was the offensive line that he had to deal with was gross. And I feel like hopefully that's better, because I'd rather him, you know, struggle against with an offensive line then learn bad habits with a bad offensive line, because like we've seen how that can really hinder the growth of a quarterback if they're forced into these situations where they have to then relearn how to play the position correctly. So I think it's going to be a little bit better. Hopefully it's better, and I think that alone will help him be better.
Progression. I don't wanna interject, Matt, and please continue right afterwards, but South Carolina fired their offensive coordinator last year, so Sellers wouldn't transfer, if that tells you anything.
But who's there now?
I have to look up exactly who they hired, but they fired their offensive coordinator last year because things were so bad, and predominantly because the blocking in front of Sellers was so terrible.
Well, at least they're self-aware. Whether that actually, you know, translates to an offensive line that's serviceable, well, I guess we'll see. If I'd like to see him, you know, with decision making and progressions, and he's a mobile quarterback for sure, but at the same time, he will run himself into bad situations, and I want to see a lot less of that. If you can limit that, I think that really the sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, I really think so. They hired Kendall Briles, Art Briles' son, to be their offensive coordinator and quarterback coach.
Okay.
So we're going to have some air raid Lenora Sellers this year, which will be interesting, but potentially also some RG3 breed option with Lenora Sellers. So that'll also be interesting. Very curious to see how this is going to go. Matt, like I alluded to earlier, I can't quit this guy. I can't. I refuse. I absolutely refuse. I think Lenora Sellers is going to be so much better in the pros than he was in college. It's stupid. I was thinking about this earlier today, and you led off with it, but I really want to put it in context for everybody. From a physical skill set standpoint, purely a physical talent standpoint, is he the perfect quarterback prospect?
Since what? Cam Newton?
Yeah, since probably Cam Newton. Yeah. In terms of arm talent, and not just arm power, but ability to have a compact release, to throw with touch, to throw with accuracy, to throw with different arm angles and to adjust your arm slot to find windows. So overall arm talent, raw speed and athleticism, size, well-built, 240 pounds cut out of a block of granite, 6'4", tough as an ox, great control in the arm, and it's a bazooka. Like, is he, what is the deficiency physically? Is there one? I don't think so. I genuinely don't think so.
I think, like, even if you look at, like, Lamar Jackson,
he's thicker than Lamar Jackson.
He's so much thicker, and I think that will make him more durable as
well. Exactly. And he eats up contact in the SEC right now. He gets the snot kicked out of him on a weekly basis and comes back for more. He runs over tacklers in the open field. He is 240. He looks like Kenyon Sadiq. Yeah. Like, playing quarterback, literally. They have, like, the same body type. And he's got a fantastic arm to go with it. I from a physical standpoint, I don't think there's a weakness with him. I think he is well more developed as a passer than he gets any credit for. It is not where it needs to be. It is not perfect. But this guy is so much better than the guys he gets compared to. His throwing right now is better than any point in Anthony Richardson's career, college or pro, period. It's not even in the same ballpark. And I see that comparison made, and I think it's so lazy. I hate it. He's also significantly more experienced. He's already got 27 career games played, 24 career starts. He's going to enter the NFL with 36 college starts under his belt. After everyone was just worried about Ty Simpson and how's he going to handle the transition and inexperience and everything else. Well, here's Lenora Sellers coming to the league, battle tested, proven that he can handle and overcome pressure with 36 career starts in the SEC, and everyone with a literal perfect physical profile, and everyone's looking at him and going, we don't want it. What? I'm dumbfounded by this early evaluation of Sellers, and I hope he goes on an absolute tear this year and proves everybody wrong, because nobody has been more unfairly evaluated, in my opinion, even though they haven't even been in the draft yet, over the last couple of years than Lenora Sellers.
And I would also note that I think if he matches his production from last year, that he would probably qualify for, you know, the Parcells rules. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Parcells rules, with over like 6,000 yards easily, the touchdown to interception ratio. I'm not sure about accuracy.
He probably wouldn't hit the completion percentage mark.
Probably, but maybe
is the area he needs to improve is down to down accuracy. Like you alluded with field vision, I think that's fine. It's consistency in his throwing mechanics, but there's the potential to get better there. And we've seen a lot of guys do it recently.
Yeah. I would like to see a higher, even a adjusted completion, mm-hmm. because he did have a 6.3 drop percentage. So it's not like he was, you know, working with the prime meat, out there. So
he does have a really, really good number one receiver in Nick Harbor. I will say that is that is somebody I'm excited for in the wide receiver evaluation when we get to next year's draft wide receivers as well. But outside of Nick Harbor, it's not like this guy has a treasure trove of skill talent around him either. And I just think that's another feather in his cap as to why it makes sense. Matt, I think like the easiest way I can say it is he's like the anti Zach Wilson. Played against top competition, didn't have the extreme talent around him or close to the same level of talent around him, behind a terrible offensive line with the capacity to handle pressure and not absorb it and not get phased by it, run away from it, or get it.
I mean, Zach was very welcome to contact also, but he was definitely phased by it.
Significantly more so.
I like that. I'll take the anti-Zach.
And he's got significantly more career starts, because Zach was, I think he had 20-something, if I'm remembering correctly. He had started as a freshman, but it wasn't the whole season. He was off and on in year two, and then he had the big year three, but it was like spotty until year three as the whole year starter.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can definitely see more of a trajectory with Sellers. So hopefully he stays on that trajectory and springboards him into the top tier talk.
Yeah, I really hope so. I'm rooting for him. There might not be anybody I'm rooting for more in college football this year, to be completely honest. I really want to see him go prove the caliber of player that I think he can be, and ultimately think he will be in the pros when he gets into a better situation than he's in South Carolina right now.
Absolutely.
All right, Matt, let's talk about another guy that is going to potentially rise up boards, completely different end of the spectrum in a lot of ways than Lenore Sellers. That's Drew Mestemaker. Drew Mestemaker blew up college football, led college football in passing yards with over 4,000 this year at North Texas, was a zero-star recruit coming out of high school, was not even a starting quarterback on his high school team, primarily played backup, was also a safety corner and punter, and somehow found his way to North Texas, walks on at North Texas in his first year starting of football, not even first year starting college football, in his first year starting of football. Goes on to lead college football in passing with over 4,000 yards, parlays that into a big NIL deal to transfer to Oklahoma State, where he will play this season, jump in competition level to see if that is going to potentially, like you said, springboard Drew Mestemaker from zero star recruit and not high school starter to first round NFL draft pick. Matt, I'm here to tell you, I think he's going to do it. I'm cautiously incredibly impressed with Drew Mestemaker, and I'm picking my words very carefully there, because there is things he needs to clean up. He is by no means whatsoever a finished product. It is clear when you watch him on North Texas this past year, that was his first year starting. You can see it in the anticipation. He's a little bit late to see receivers come open. He likes to see them completely come out of their break open before he decides to make the throw. There were a couple of instances that I saw where even on plays that went on to be completions or even touchdowns, the corner was beat so badly by the receiver and Mestemaker still threw it pretty late. It didn't just matter because the corner was just that beaten. That's got to get cleaned up if we're going to be talking about we're starting in the NFL on Sundays where NFL windows are so much tighter. There's 100% an issue, at least in my opinion, with his ability to throw it touch right now. He doesn't quite have the arm motion down. He holds the ball very, very low, almost like at his belt buckle. And so it has to come up high to then come over back down to throw. And when he's going over the middle and in rhythm, it's fine. But when he has to put some pace and arc on the ball, I do think he struggles there. Matt, everything else for a guy starting in his first year, how? The ability to get through reads as quick as he does, to come off targets, to get to his second and third progression, to reset his feet in the pocket, to fire shots over the middle, to be on time at his second and third reads over the middle, blew me away for a first year start. Blew me away. His ability to navigate the pocket and avoid pressure, keep his eyes up, make subtle movements, reset, find targets downfield and deliver. Blew me away. The arm talent is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And I don't even think he's even close to as good as he can be with it yet, because his mechanics are all the F over the place. And once that gets ironed in, when, I don't know, he starts for a second year of football, again, not college football, starts for a second year of football, how good is this guy going to even be? I'm very, very impressed, cautiously as it is, because it is so early and the competition level is definitely not what you would expect for a first-round NFL draft pick. But man, the talent is there from a physical standpoint, Matt. But what I was not expecting to see, and what's really got me hooked, this kid is just a natural at operating in the pocket already. And that is really impressive.
Yeah, that's definitely the first thing that jumped out at me when I was watching him, is the bounce in his step.
The bounce, in the pocket. The light feet, the quick reset, the eyes never drop. I mean, it looks like he's been doing this for his whole life. And then you remember, he didn't even start in high school.
Maybe he just doesn't know any better.
He never got a chance to be bad, to learn the bad habits. Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, the comfortability that he has in the pocket is very impressive. And he's definitely not an immobile guy, because if things break down and he needs to move and get that first down, he can do it. I mean, he's no Sellers, but he can still extend plays.
It's not a negative for him. Mobility is most definitely not a negative for him at all.
No, if you get those mechanics down, I think there's a very good chance that he could be a top prospect. But what year? So this would be his. Is he a true?
He is, I believe, junior? I believe he is a redshirt sophomore. I think he redshirted at North Texas as a walk-on, and then this was his first year starting. Yeah. He did not go straight from zero star, that he had the year in between as a walk-on at North Texas. But I believe it was primarily even trying to walk on as a punter, and then ultimately found his way in at quarterback, and took over and took the league in college football by storm from there. It's just give him more time. Like, that's the only thing I have, is just let him play more. The more and more he plays, the better and better he's going to get, the quicker he's going to be with his decisions. I don't think he's a bad decision maker. I think he sees the field overall pretty well. It's, again, for somebody in their first year starting playing blank football, it is really, really impressive. I do think it's just going to get better with time. In terms of a comparison, and I don't want to make this comparison this early, but I can't get it out of my head, and it's the summer. Heck, let's be crazy. He looks like Drake May. He looks like Drake May in the pocket. He's like Drake May thrown down the field. I don't think his vision is nearly to where it was to where Drake May was at North Carolina. I thought Drake May's field vision in North Carolina is the only other guy I've seen recently better than him was Burrow. That we're not there with Mestemaker.
No.
We could be. We could be in the future. We could be at the end of next year. If it's that quick of a jump, if you're that good this quick now, who's to say you won't improve that much at Oklahoma State? Who's to say you won't take the jump in competition and run with it? If you told me there's a world where Drew Mestemaker is the first pick in the draft next year, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. I don't see any reason why he could not be taken as the first quarterback in this class.
So here's the thing. I think that he would have to have that significant jump and to really convince me that he is coming out this year. Because I think anything less than that, he's probably going to go back just to get that last year and really try to springboard his way into the top tier talk.
He very well could.
In a lighter class, potentially. There's no reason why he can't make that jump. Everything's there. He just needs to put it all together.
It's not even so much that. It's do it more. Like, I don't even... I don't think he has to figure. I can't even believe I'm saying this. This guy's literally in his first year starting, period. I don't think he has to figure out how to play quarterback. I think he just naturally knows how. He just needs to be more experienced doing it.
Yeah. Who's he's following somebody to Oklahoma State, right? Isn't it?
Is that what it is?
Is it the head coach or the offensive coordinator?
Let me look this
up. Or the quarterback? But there's some kind of connection there that I think is, you know, just the comfortability there, I think will help a lot with the transition. But at the same time, I think
Texas's head coach was hired as Oklahoma State's head coach in last November.
Okay.
So he's following his head coach, which means he's going to be playing most likely in the same offense.
But now where was he before North Texas? Because I feel like he was in Miami.
Mestemaker?
And I think, no, the head coach.
So Eric Morris was hired on November 25th. He was at North Texas since 2023. So let's see where he was before 2023. 2022, he was at Washington State, which, correct me if I'm wrong, means he was with Cam Ward.
Yep. Oh, wait, did he?
Under his guidance, okay. Quarterback Cam Ward, mm-hmm. And later on in the bio, was 23 touchdowns, which was sixth in the Pac-12. And he was looks like he was in D2 for a few years before that. So no Miami.
Okay, no Miami. It was Ward, though, that I think I was thinking of, probably. So he has experience with a quarterback that could be drafted highly.
He was Cam Ward's coach at Incarnate Ward.
So Ward followed him.
Ward followed him, and Mestemaker's doing the same thing.
What does that say?
That's helpful.
A guy that quarterbacks want to follow.
You taught a guy good enough to go number one. Why not do it again?
Yeah, I can see it.
Why not do it again? I'm really curious to see how he's going to be this year, because all of my negatives are just inexperience. Like, that's all it is. You need to be more comfortable in your mechanics and more consistent to have your down to down accuracy. When he's in rhythm, Matt, I thought he was deadly accurate. Like, not even kind of, it's like the ball's on dude's face mask every time when he's in rhythm. When he gets out of rhythm, it's 5 and 6 yard misses. And that's what you need to iron out with more consistency in your mechanics. But I think that comes with time. I think you're going to get with a quarterback coach that now you're big time NIL money, Big 12 starting quarterback. A quarterback coach is going to get in your ear and say, hey, we don't need the ball up under our ear, but we need to get it up from our belt buckle. And we need to have a little more of a raise and comfortability in where we're holding the ball before we throw, so we can tighten up that motion a little bit, maybe allow you to adjust your arm slot. We're going to be even more, you know, tighter in recognizing edge pressure. I don't know if this was a thing you noticed, Matt. He does not see blitzes off the edge.
No.
He doesn't see them. And that's going to come with time, because he's going to be in the film room watching his own film at North Texas, remembering the times he got his ribs cracked, going, man, I don't want that to happen again. I'm going to look and double check to see if the slot is coming before I hike the ball. And we're going to be better there. All of it is just, I'm in my first year starting. And everything else is like worlds better than it has any reason to be. His negatives are like, yeah, these are issues you need to work on. They're like 4s out of 10 right now. And the highs are like 8s or 9s. And for me, that is really, really hard to ignore, and really, really hard to say isn't going to continue to improve at this pace, at this trajectory. I'm another guy that I'm really rooting for, but like you said, if he comes out, it's like I almost want him to have a season where he's good enough to warrant coming out, but not good enough to be the first pick, because I don't know if the Jets are going to be bad enough to pick that high. And I just have a feeling about this kid that it's like, get in while you can, like, get on the board early.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully we have those three first round picks. So, I mean, hopefully we don't need it to trade up to the first pick to get the guy that we want. But there's a lot of potential here to be able to land any of the two guys that we just mentioned. It's gotta see how it shakes out, how they react in different scenery or with a better offensive line. There's definitely factors here that can definitely help them improve. They just need to do it.
Yes, it's going to be about improving in the key areas, but for both of these guys, like you said, talent is not the question.
No,
there is no question whatsoever with the physical ability. It is, can you take that physical ability to the places it has the potential to go? For Lenora Sellers, it's about overcoming everything around you, and for Drew Mestemaker, it's about getting more opportunity to do it, really, and taking a jump in competition and adding more around you and seeing how you respond when not only the people in front of you get better, but so do the people across from you. So this is going to be a fun year. I'm going to be tracking both of these guys really closely. Early favorites for me, Matt, these two right here. Early favorites. I haven't gotten super, super far deep in the whole list. We still have guys to get to and the entire year of college football to play out to finalize rankings and all of that. But
I haven't even mentioned Arch Manning yet.
I haven't even mentioned Arch Manning yet, but of my early glimpses for my money and who I've enjoyed watching, I think these two are my favorite two of the group. I really do.
I have a feeling that's going to be the case for me as well.
I'm never going to quit Lenora Sellers because I think he's like a Madden create a player quarterback. Truly, not just, oh, his arm is strong. It's like, no, he actually knows how to throw for the most part. And just the build and everything else with him is crazy. I'm blown away by Mestemaker in the pocket for a guy so inexperienced. It makes absolutely no sense. He makes it look so easy that it makes me go, how do other guys struggle with this? That, like, why are there players that are 3-year starters that don't know how to navigate the pocket like he does, when it's just, oh, the guy's coming at me, I move out of the way and I look up the field and I find a guy to throw to. Okay, cool. Next play. Let's do it. Like, it's like it you remember, it's like the Legally Blonde scene. Like, what? Like, it's hard. Like, that's Drew Mestemaker in the pocket. And I'm smitten with that already.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, yeah, it's hard not to be. There's just so much raw talent that's waiting to be exploited to the max, and we haven't even seen that yet.
No, we haven't. And we'll have plenty of time to discuss this more in the future, but for as much time as we've already spent talking about the situation a rookie quarterback is going to be walking into, that they'll be different than other rookie quarterbacks have walked into that have been drafted by this team in recent years, and the level of talent and the improvement overall of that unit. Man, if you're going to be drafting somebody high, swing for the fences with talent. Don't go for the safe one, because you got a roster that's equipped to put up absolute freaking numbers if you hit on somebody with that kind of talent.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll always kind of echo back to my little research project where I was looking at the success of rookie quarterbacks, mm-hmm. when they have an offensive line and weapons. And if you put any of the two guys that we've mentioned with the potential that they have behind that this offensive line with these weapons, yeah, you're right. There's such a high potential for them to find success.
Yeah, there really is. And I'm hopeful that whoever it ends up being that they draft is going to be walking into a great situation. And if it's one of these two guys, I think they're going to be lighting things up before too long.
I'd be very happy with either of these guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Matt, I think that does it for this week. Why don't you let the people know where they can find you and we can wrap this one up?
I'm Matt. You can find me at Zazzy Jets.
And you can find me at AndrewGolden_17. You can also follow the show at OKD Podcast. Thank you also so much for tuning in. Keep it locked as we break through every week of training camp. We'll be covering the first practice as it wraps up at the end of next Wednesday. And as well as we continue breaking down these 2027 quarterback prospects, we're going to get through 12 of them. Will all 12 of them make it to the draft? Most likely not, but we're going to cover them anyway, just in case they do. And we can start that process now. Thank you all so much one more time, and we'll be back real soon. Bye-bye.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.